Welcome to this third bonus episode of The District. I'm Paula Penfold.
I'm Eugene Dingham.
You know, sometimes we have a little bit of a laugh amongst ourselves at Stuff Circuit, that we are actually old crimes are us, because for some reason we often seem to gravitate towards, you know, old crimes, unsolved crimes and miscarriages of justice. And the one that we want to tell you about in today's bonus episode is not actually directly connected with the Crewe homicide case, but it's one, Eugene, that you are particularly intrigued by.
I just find its echoes of what happened in the Crewe murder are quite spooky.
Right. Okay, step us back in time all the way to
1920.
1920?
So it's just after the war, just after the First World War, and New Zealand is still actually a dominion at that time. It's not even, you know, gone beyond that stage. So really fledgling. And we are back in Pukekaua, where the Crewe murders happen.
Same district.
Mm-hmm.
And so on the banks of the Waikato River, and there's a soldier who's been away to war, and he returns, Sydney Eyre.
Yeah, so Sydney Eyre, he farmed 600 acres, sheep farm, described as one of the best worked farms in the district, and a guy who by all accounts was really popular in the district as well. He had been, I haven't quite seen why this was, and most of our information about this is drawn from previous media coverage in the 1920s, coverage of the trial and so on. He was unwell, and he was sent to Canada to recuperate when war broke out. And so he ended up being enlisted into fighting for the 50th Canadian Scottish Regiment, and went to the front line in Russia and Siberia.
Yeah. So he eventually comes home from war to his farmland in Pukekaua. And this is the intriguing part. Well, there's quite a lot that's intriguing, but he comes home without warning his wife.
Yeah, and so I guess you could say the war had ended, but he didn't find peace, because while he was away, a succession of farm workers had helped with the farm where his wife Millie and their children were, and one worker, Samuel John Thorne, had stayed in the house.
I can see where this is going.
Yeah, it went there. So one night, one of the heir's sons, suspicious about what was going on, watched through a crack in his bedroom door, and he saw his mother and Samuel Thorne engaging in, and I love this phrase, what he called improper relations.
The old improper relations. So Millie Eyre did actually later confess that there had been a relationship with Samuel Thorne, but she insisted that it was over by the time her husband had returned. But obviously things were a bit tense.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, this was wartime, and, you know, Sydney Eyre had been away for a long time and so on. So I guess we need to remember that context. But the struggles of soldiers reintegrating into home life after conflict is, you know, a pretty old story. So the Eyres tried their best. They tried to get on with things.
Until?
So August 24, 1920, Sydney Eyre is asleep in his bed, single bed in his room. Someone points a gun through the window and fires.
Millie Eyre is asleep on another bed in the same room, and she hears someone running away behind the house and sends one of her sons out the front door for help. The doctor comes, but it's too late.
Too late, yeah. So Sydney Eyre, this respected and well-loved member of the district, is dead. So obviously it's a huge scandal within the district, and is the cause of a major police investigation. They began looking at the type of ammunition which had been used and the location from which the fatal shot had been fired through the window, and they concluded the shooter could only have been left-handed. Now, that's one of the little echoes of the Crewe case. Of course, obviously, there's the district, but you'll remember from the district that the Crewes were shot through a window, and there was a lot of focus on ammunition.
There was. So back in this 1920 murder, the police also looked closely at the horseshoe tracks nearby, and guess what? Samuel John Thorne, he had recently bought ammunition like that used in the murder. He was left-handed, and he had a horse who had the same shoes, which left tracks like the ones found at the scene. So he's arrested and charged with Sydney Eyre's murder.
Yeah, and again, this is where there's another echo of the Crewe case. He maintains his innocence. He pleads not guilty. He goes to trial, but he insists that he didn't do it. But on the 20th of December 1920, he's hanged at Mount Eden Jail. And before his execution, he strongly maintains his innocence, protests that the police had treated him unjustly. Sound familiar? And among his final words were, "I did not commit this murder, and I don't know who did."
Mm. So why is it that you're so taken with this particular case?
Well, like I say, it's just another intriguing case in the district. And it's another example where there's claim of injustice, an innocent man. And really, it just sort of speaks to that theme we had in the podcast of injustice spreading through a district, through families, through generations. And, you know, half century on from that initial tragedy, the murder of Sidney Eyre, there's another murder in the district, which, remember, Margaret
Stuckey, Buster's wife, Des's and Arthur's sister.
Yeah, she talked about that curse that she felt in the district. Maybe that's where it began, back in 1920.
If you don't have time to read the in-depth stories, or you just prefer to listen instead, The Long Read from Stuff is the podcast for you. Each week, we showcase one of our excellent pieces of journalism, telling important or entertaining stories from the world of crime, sport, history, culture, and more. You also get to hear from the journalists themselves about how they uncovered the story and how it came to life. So, for your weekly dose of long-form journalism, beautifully read, subscribe to The Long Read from Stuff wherever you get your podcasts.